The College Game Day podcast is presented by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises.
We got a real simple plan. One man, one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
If you're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven.
This might be college football heaven.
This is ESPN's College Game Day podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel is Reese Davis.
Two top 10 matchups, a major road test, and perhaps the last one for Clemson, and stone cold locks that have been a little shaky, just to be honest about it. This is the College Game Day podcast for Friday, November 4th. Reese Davis, Pete Thamel, and the great Bill Connolly, and all of his fancy numbers coming in with SP Plus this week. We're going to make some picks. Bill, what's your SP Plus tell you, without giving away too much on your pick, about the big showdown in Athens? What's the big number of all of them that jumps out that could decide the game?
Tennessee's defense is the single key to this game. And that's if they didn't suddenly just flip a switch last week, I guess. Suddenly they were pretty phenomenal defensively. But that's the major thing here. Georgia's offensive numbers are elite. Their defensive numbers are elite. Tennessee's offensive numbers are great. Tennessee's defensive numbers are meh. But that's why Georgia's favored.
Tennessee still sitting there number one. That sort of falls in line with some of the things that Pete and I talked about on Wednesday, the Wednesday podcast, about the various matchups and whether Tennessee can stop Georgia from running, whether the tight ends are able to make big plays, whether Brock Bowers is the guy who ends up dominating this game and proves to be the best player on the field, maybe in the country, and best in game, is brought to you by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises. And the promise for Georgia offensively, if they're going to control this game, Pete, is going to be utilizing Brock Bowers often and most efficiently.
Yeah, we're sort of in this great era in football of the dynamic tight end, and it's been such a fun evolution of the game. When you think about Gronk, you think about George Kittle, you think about Kyle Pitts, was probably, in the 20 years that I've done this as a national college football writer, the single best tight end prospect, right? I mean, Kyle Pitts was just a freakazoid. And I asked some NFL scouts this week about Brock Bowers, who obviously has a year left. One coach joked with me. He said Bowers might be their best tailback, too. And that just, again, we talked on Wednesday about the headaches that he causes from that position. Well, the fact that he could take a jet sweep or he could take a handoff, like that just creates different stresses on defense than anyone can. So we are a year and a half through the Brock Bowers experience, which means we're going to have another year and a half left. And we just have to enjoy it because he is rare. Now, will he be picked where Kyle Pitts is in the NFL draft? You want to nitpick? No, because he's not 6'6", right? He's a little bit, you know, will he be able to, will the way he blocks, which is good, will that translate? So all I'm saying is he's probably going to be a top 15 pick right now instead of a top 5 pick. And again, when you really start getting into how rare of a player is he conversations, those are the nitpicks on how they go. But I really feel like, boy, I get excited to watch Brock Bowers play. I mean, it's not even close of, you know, who am I most excited to see on Saturday on Georgia? It's Brock Bowers by a landslide.
Those jet sweeps are hilarious because the safety is like, oh, they're okay, a handoff to the tight end. Oh God, he's past me. like you see them kind of just jogging towards it. Okay, a little gimmick play, and then they realize, oh man, this is bad. This is bad. This is bad.
This is what Pete was talking about on Wednesday, that several of the coaches unsolicited brought up what a great job Todd Monken has done, not only breaking tendencies, but being creative in different ways and handing the ball to the tight end in a variety of fashions. If you know what, we might even need to come up with a different position designation for him, because he can do all the things a tight end can do. But I don't know if just saying H or, you know, hybrid HY or even hybrid really necessarily gives due credit to everything Brock Bowers brings to an offense.
Well, he's from Napa, so maybe we'll just call it the Pino.
Well, think about what you just said, and sort of like the old Modern Family line, when they would say something that sounded different, they go, I just heard it. You know,
I don't know. I'm just trying to think of like what we could call him.
I'm just disappointed that Virginia last year on their depth chart, when they were getting super weird on offense, they just listed Keaton Thompson as football player. I'm kind of disappointed that that didn't really catch on.
That's actually a great idea.
Yeah,
they should put Bowers on the depth chart as football player, baller. Dude. How about just baller? Yeah, at the baller position, brought Bowers. There's no depth chart. It's just him. That's it.
That'd be what a recruiting tool. Not that Georgia needs another recruiting tool, but you would have guys coming to town to be the next baller starter at Georgia.
That's a great idea. What do you say, Taylor? Let's make some picks and give the people what they probably don't need, but maybe they want.
All right, fellas, week 10 in the race for the ribeye. The stakes are stakes, and we've got a tight one heading into the final month of the regular season. I won't divulge your overall records completely, but Bill's got 38 wins, Reese's 36, and Pete has 35. Pete had the first push of the season there with his lock last week. But Pete did top our week 9 standings. He was 4-3-1, Reese was 3-5, and Bill 2-6. Uncharacteristic performance, sir.
Well, it's not that uncharacteristic, but no, my numbers did great. My lock hit. I was like, all right, probably had a decent week. And then you send the email this morning and kind of ruined my day a little bit.
Sorry.
It is really funny because Pete and I often on Saturdays we go, who did you take in this game? And I don't remember. I think this team's going to win, but that's often because I may not remember precisely what the spread is. And also because, Bill, you've talked about this a lot too. No matter how much I try not to overanalyze, I do and think, oh, that number's not quite right. I'll go the other way. And that ends up hosing you. So anyway.
Did Ohio State end up covering or not?
They did not.
Okay,
because backdoor
again. Yeah, I thought it was a backdoor, and that was such a wacky game. So you watch it. Sadly, you watch it with your pick in the back of your mind, right? Yeah. You know why? What gets gamblers? The allure of gambling. You can tell. So I'm like, oh, Ohio State's not going to cover. They might lose, and then it's like, oh, they're definitely going to cover. And then I think I honestly flipped to another game that was ending. And then at the end, I was like, and I don't remember the number, but I was like, yeah, that's pretty simple. Now, did they deserve to cover the way they played the first three quarters? Probably not. So I'm not going to complain here. I don't, sometimes you have a great pick and the game plays out and then somebody like pure backdoors it, like with a late kick return or something. And you're like, oh, that doesn't do the game justice. Penn State did that game justice. They covered it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Ohio State was on the cover, I think, if I remember, after the Tuimoloau low out pick six, I think. Mm-hmm. And so it was sort of that. And then they got another touchdown. So it came out the way it should have. Penn State was the, with the points, was the accurate call. And it turned out to be that way. So,
yeah. Sean Clifford, by the way, I realize Penn State fans are probably tired, that they're ready for the next guy and all that. But despite himself, in a way, he has proven his resilience pretty incredibly through the years, and especially on Saturday, because he was throwing some great passes. He would have a disaster. He'd come right back and play again. So that last touchdown was probably justice, but also good for him for just continuing to peck away and finding some good plays, I guess.
Yeah, he keeps fighting for sure. Sort of like us. We make the picks. We keep making bad plays. We keep throwing interceptions. And we're back there to spin the magic bean again. Let's make some picks, Taylor.
Let's spin it. Friday night, 10:30 p.m., Pac-12 after dark. Oregon State at Washington. Washington, a 3.5-point favorite. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
Oregon State being ranked by the College Football Playoff Committee, I thought was a good call and a deserved one. Washington's been a little bit better at home than on the road. The number is low. I'm going to say, even though I like the fact that Beav is ranked, they deserve it, and I think they're good. I'm going to take Washington to win that game and cover at home late night on Friday night.
Funny things happen on weeknights, Pac-12 after dark, and the Beav just did curb stomp Colorado the weekend that we were in Oregon, and they've played really well. Give Jonathan Smith credit. He's brought that program. He's in the midst of maximizing that program. That said, Washington Friday night home field advantage, I think pound for pound, probably a little bit more talented than Oregon State. So I'm going to take the when in doubt, take the home favorite on a weeknight in a short week. So I will go with Mr. Penix and the Husky.
Yeah, we're starting unanimously. That's never a very good sign, I don't think. But I will. You know, trends point towards Oregon State here. Washington, you know, one of the things I try to follow with my numbers is not only like who's, you know, rising or falling or whatever, but who's overachieving projections, who's underachieving. And Washington, you know, they started the year first four games all overachieving by an average of like 11 points a game because obviously they were projected pretty low. They jump into just about the top 20 in SP Plus, and now they've underachieved for four straight games by about 8 points a game. So that's kind of interesting, but also they have a bye week. They've got the best offense, like the best unit in this game is the Washington offense. And I'm guessing, you know, the Cal game was kind of weird. That was the only reason they underachieved there. They felt like they were in control for the most part. So I think I trust Washington a little bit more in this game.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Ting and Your Tang Tang game, Tennessee at Georgia. Georgia, I put in the email when I sent this to you an 8.5-point favorite. I just checked. The line has shifted down to 8, so we'll keep it that. Georgia, 8-point favorite for College Game Day. Let's do Pete, Bill, Reese.
I'm taking the Vols and I'm taking them to win. I'm going to take them to win outright. Like I'm not involved in the Superdog shenanigans, but I feel like where Tennessee is strongest, Georgia is weakest, and that's on the perimeter. And too many teams that don't have Tennessee's skill felt like they could exploit that Georgia perimeter. So I am staying with Hyatt. I am riding with Cedric Tillman, and I am taking Tennessee for the seismic upset that would likely cement them in the SEC title game and really, barring anything unforeseen, give them a playoff bid.
I mean, it'd feel really weird not picking Tennessee right now, just because, I mean, they've already won the biggest Tennessee-Florida game in 20 years. They've won the biggest Tennessee-Alabama game in like 30 years. They had the perfect trap game set up last week with a really physical team that seemed to be able to challenge them in a lot of ways that maybe they hadn't been challenged. And they played their best game of the season by far in destroying Kentucky. So, I mean, they're rolling right now, and I'm going to pick against them. I'm going with Georgia because I just think they're better still. I think this is Georgia's head, you know, Georgia's biggest issue this year is just attention span issues as much as anything. Like once they decide, okay, well, it's time to go score, they go score every single time. And their defense, obviously without Nolan Smith, that's going to be, we're going to find out if Tennessee can force them to blitz a little bit. They don't really blitz. They don't really pressure the quarterback. They just let you commit to what you're doing. And then they pursue with, you know, absurd speed and gang tackle and all those things that those Alabama defenses used to do. So we're going to find out exactly how much you can test them, especially on the edge. Like Pete said, I'm just going to, this is like my old Alabama rule. When in doubt, pick the heavyweight and until you have a reason not to. So I'm going Georgia.
I was really hoping when you said it would be weird to pick against Tennessee, I had a line loaded up in my head and everything. I was going to say, well, let's get weird because I'm picking Georgia. All of the things are true about Tennessee. There's definite 2019 LSU vibes with this team, with the old quarterback and the explosive receivers and sort of rising up out of nowhere. But I think Georgia has been overlooked and underappreciated and weaknesses overly magnified. And I think that they have a little bit of an attitude about it. And the one thing that no one has been able to do this year is to make Hendon Hooker get rid of it and fit it in the keyhole. I'm going to gamble that Georgia can do that. I wish the spread were a little smaller, to be honest, because I do think Tennessee is going to put up probably minimum 31 points. Going to take four in the neighborhood of 40 to win it at least. So I'm worried. I'm worried about the number for sure, but I'm picking Georgia to win. And if I'm going to do that, I'm not going to worry about the number. So I'll take the dogs to cover it, probably barely if they do.
Yeah, I assumed this would be a Georgia minus 6.5 line. Like that just felt perfect for this game, and it ended up a little higher than that.
We may end up there on Saturday. Just a hunch. Friends in arid regions.
Yep.
Meanwhile, in the SEC West, Alabama, 13.5 point favorite, headed to Death Valley after dark. LSU, let's go, Bill, Reese, Pete.
I'm mad at the playoff committee. I'm always mad about something, but really I'm just mad because it kind of screwed up the framing of my Friday preview. Like I was leaning heavily into the number one versus number two thing, and I'm still going to with Tennessee, Georgia, but I have to now specify, well, this is the AP we're talking about because the committee went and made it number one versus number three. But either way, it's fitting that this is happening on Alabama LSU day because the last two one versus two games were Bama LSU. This one's kind of, speaking of trends, LSU is trending in the right direction here. Not just, you know, whatever it is, the six wins in seven games, I think. But they have really started to figure out each other on offense. That means, you know, the offensive coaching staff and Jaden Daniels are both coming to understand what each other needs. And they're running the ball really, really, really well. And you can kind of run the ball in Alabama. Tennessee did a little bit. Like, you're not going to get 30-yard runs, but you're going to get 6-yard runs sometimes. And it kind of seems like as long as LSU can stay on schedule and kind of manage the down and distance, they can score a decent number of points here. Alabama might too, but that really, you know, the longer this game is closed, Death Valley at night, all those things come into play, and it could be really interesting. I'm just not sure that LSU can stay on schedule enough. They're going to punish Jaden Daniels for scrambling too much if he starts to do so. I'm not sure LSU can find open receivers enough. That's been the big thing with Alabama, is, you know, stretching them vertically and hitting some deeper passes. I don't think they can do that, and I assume Alabama wins because of it, or wins by a good amount because of it in covers.
So that number to me is huge for Alabama in Death Valley. It's just a giant number considering how pedestrian Alabama has looked on the road. Now they obviously ran away from Arkansas at the end of that game, but that game was a slobber knocker for basically three quarters, and quite frankly, until Jalen Milroe went in and just ran away from the Arkansas defense. So I really think that, you know, I can't get over Alabama's pre-snap penalty issues when you're talking about playing in Death Valley. I can't get over the drops in that environment. I can't get over how pedestrian Alabama's receiver crew is. You know, you could say outside Jermaine Burton, and Jermaine Burton's fine. He'll be a draft pick and he's a nice player. So I just don't think Alabama is hardwired right now to go win by two touchdowns in Death Valley. I think this is a game that Alabama wins and they barely win. And I have a hard time envisioning them doing to LSU what they just did to Mississippi State. And Jaden Daniels obviously will be the key for LSU. He has to play mistake free like he did the last 2 weeks. This is the ultimate test of one's development curve.
LSU at night has been a situation that Alabama has owned. I don't recall the last Alabama coach not named Shula to lose a night game in Baton Rouge. They haven't lost at all there since 2010, which was the last time that they were eliminated from the national championship race prior to the last weekend of the season, or actually in the postseason, and it was to LSU. And that's exactly what will happen if they lose Saturday night in Baton Rouge. I lean to Alabama to win the game, but based on virtually everything Pete said and just a general sloppiness with which they've played most of the season, especially on the road, there's no way I'm laying two touchdowns against a good team on the road. No way. I mean, should they? Probably, but I'm not doing it. So I think Alabama will win, probably, but I'm taking LSU in the points. I haven't seen enough evidence to think that they can play precisely and crisply enough, really anywhere, but particularly on the road, to make you think that they're going to go in and whack them by two touchdowns. So I'll take LSU in the points.
It is good!
Texas, a 2.5-point favorite, heading to Kansas State after Kansas State ripped Oklahoma State limb from limb. Very odd here. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
It is a little bit odd. You saw some of the respect that the way Texas has played, if not necessarily the results, manifest itself in the college football playoff rankings, with Texas being the lone 3-loss team in the rankings, sitting at 24, I believe. So, you know, this is sort of a do or die game for the Longhorns in terms of, are you going to have what can be perceived as a good season, maybe a really good one, or are you going to have a mediocre season? So it's a pivotal game for Texas. I really worry about a team sometimes that played perfectly, the week before, of coming back and doing it again. But Kansas State has been so good. They've got two quarterbacks now, depending on what Adrian Martinez's health situation is. I think they'll be able to run it some. If Howard's in there, they'll be able to pass it. Texas has a propensity for, even if they get things going well on the road and build double-digit leads, that they fritter them away. And so even if Texas jumps on top, I won't be alarmed. And you're going to give me Chris Klieman and this hard-nosed, tough Wildcat team at home, and you're going to give me a couple of points to boot, I'll take it. I'll go K-State.
I'm most interested to see who trots out under center for the Wildcats on Saturday. Boy, Will Howard, I don't want to say he could have Wally pipped Adrian Martinez, but he could not have played much better, much like Kansas State couldn't have played and looked much better in that game against Oklahoma State on Saturday. Adrian Martinez is getting better. He did warm up prior to that Oklahoma State game. He's got a lower body injury. The prevailing thought is that, there's a chance he's back. But if you're Chris Klieman, Do you ride with the hot hand who delivered one of the most authoritative victories in the last, since one of the Bill Snyder eras for your school? It'd be hard to turn away from him there. So I am one thing Texas has taught us as they've muddled through these past couple of years is, when in doubt, pick against them. Because especially on the road, especially against hard-nosed teams, because they just have shown a propensity to fade in the fourth. And I don't see what has changed about them. There is always, when you pick against Texas, the pit in your stomach is Bijan Robinson could just go off for 225, because he is one of the 10 best players in college football. And it's a bit of a shame that when he's an all-pro his third year in the NFL, people are going to be like, why wasn't he better in college? Because I do think he has that kind of talent. But I'm going to ride the Wildcats as long as they keep hanging 50 burgers.
Yeah, I feel like I'm responsible for defending computers when it comes to Texas, because the bookmaker, the odds makers are clearly still on Texas' side. And if you look at, pick your predictive rating of choice, whether it's SP Plus or FPI or whatever, they probably have Texas higher than you would expect them to have a 5-3 team. And the underlying reasons for that are just that. Down for down, drive for drive, play for play, they have been one of the 10 or so best teams in the country this year. They're just scrolling through some of their numbers. They're 23rd in offensive success rate against a high strength of schedule. They're efficient. They've made a lot of plays. On defense, they stop the run about as well as just about anybody can. 9th in rushing success rate. They don't give up many big pass plays. They just kind of, they contribute a whole lot of good things to a given box score. And if the season were 82 games or 162 games or whatever, Texas is probably winning the Big 12 in that case over the long haul. They're also 3-8, I believe, still in one score finishes under Steve Sarkisian. And one of those was this year against an Iowa State team that is just as bad in close games. That's the only one they've won this year. They let Oklahoma State just peck away and come back. They figured out a way to – Texas Tech needed like 6 fourth down conversions, but they figured out how to come back and make that game close and end up winning it. It's just they either win a game comfortably or they, as everybody's been saying, they falter in the fourth quarter. So if the Lions – never mind what my numbers say, which it's about what the line says – if the game's close, why would you expect Texas to win it right now? Especially, granted, they beat Kansas State last year in a close game, but this is a different Kansas State team, and I'm just going to assume, give them a couple points especially, I'm going to assume they figure out how to cover and win.
It is good!
Clemson, a 3.5-point favorite, heading to Notre Dame. Let's go Pete, Bill Reese.
So it's the DJ Uiagalelei Okoda game, right? This is where he had his breakout in 2020, and where his recruiting hype was validated, and what, you know, sort of launched the narrative of his career to inevitable success. He has obviously had some failure in between, rebuilt. We've talked about him a bunch on the pod. Really respect the way he's handled adversity, grown from it. So it is kind of an interesting, fitting moment here. For him going back to South Bend, where he did lose that game in 2020, but to still, you know, be here with the high stakes that he's earned Clemson, which, by the way, still has the longest winning streak in the country. We forget sometimes. That said, I got a feeling about Notre Dame in this game. They really, you know, took it to Syracuse right from the opening pick six in that game and went through. They found an identity running the football. They're obviously very limited at quarterback. I think this is going to be a low-scoring game. I think it's going to be a close game. And I do think there's some Irish juju right now. Again, they'd be if they hadn't fallen on their face against Stanford, they'd be legitimately hot right now. They lost that game, obviously, 16-14. But I think they figured out how to best use the pieces they have. And I think Michael Mayer, especially, we talked a lot about Brock Bowers on the pods this week. Michael Mayer's had an outlandish season, especially because he's the only player they're really going to pass to on most pass plays. So I'm going to take the Irish and a little bit of juju here.
I've been leaning that way for a while, and I started to realize over time, I'm pretty sure it's just because I'm kind of anti-Clemson at the moment. That was solidified on Tuesday night. Like, they have no business ranking fourth in my mind. They should have been about seventh in the playoff rankings. The whole ranked wins thing, because they have three teams that just squeezed into the rankings, that does nothing for me. Michigan should have been ahead of them. TCU had a case. So it's kind of poisoning my thoughts right now. But I think from a matchups perspective, they're still better than Notre Dame. The one thing Notre Dame's been able to figure out on offense, especially, is just how to nibble. They have no big play threats right now, or minimal big play threats. But they can figure out how to gain 4 yards pretty consistently on the ground, and about 7 throwing to Mayer or one of the outside guys with the passing game. So that's worked. It worked against Syracuse eventually. I just don't see it working. If Clemson's really healthy on the defensive front now, they've been pretty underwhelming up front, but we know what they're capable of there. If they're finally healthy or close to it, I just don't see Notre Dame moving the ball. And that buys Uiagalelei, even if he continues to struggle a little bit, I think he's probably why they don't pose much of a threat in the playoff if they make it. But I figure he can do enough in this one. So I'm picking Clemson to cover.
I'm absolutely picking Clemson to cover. And I have some of the same questions that other people do, but I also feel like in many ways that I'm the outside of Clemson, South Carolina. I'm almost like the last man standing who kind of believes in them, at least their defense. I have plenty of questions about their offense. That's obvious. But I don't think the way Notre Dame is built, running the ball and throwing to Mayer as good as he is, as good as they are running, you're not doing that, Clemson. You're just not. How you're going to beat Clemson or have a chance to is Wake Forest. Yeah. You know, take a shot at their defensive backs. Like Tennessee, Ohio State, would probably run Clemson out of the stadium. I mean, you know, just to be honest about it. But Notre Dame won't. I mean, I think Clemson wins this game handily, you know, not in blowout fashion, but handily, and they cover it. So I'm going with the Roy bus, Dabo, poor old Dabo, just on the rest of y'all bus, and, you know, see if they can somehow slop around, squeeze in, and get in the playoff where old Reese Davis and everybody else, nobody's giving us a chance. So we'll see. Before we move on, there's one quick thing I want to mention. The NBA is off and running. Get your basketball fix with The Low Post. Zach Lowe is talking basketball with the smartest people in the business. Now twice a week, follow The Low Post wherever you're listening to this podcast.
Last game before we get to your locks. Wake Forest, a 4.5-point favorite over NC State. Kind of two different teams in two different directions. Wake Forest, blowout loss after a lead at halftime. NC State, comeback win on the road at Virginia Tech with a freshman quarterback. Let's go, Bill Reese Pete.
I've stared at this game all week. I have no idea. I just none whatsoever. NC State was super resilient, obviously, the way they pieced together, not only with a non-Devin Leary quarterback, but with their second choice in the game, coming in and finally, you know, what I was saying about Georgia earlier, okay, it's time to be perfect and win the game. They did that against Virginia Tech, and it was really impressive. But they're still so underwhelming offensively. And Wake Forest, for the whole season, by far, you know, has matched NC State's defense from a dominance perspective. They're still one of the most explosive offenses in the country. They were one of the most trustworthy offenses in the country until they decided to turn the ball over 38 times in the third quarter last week. And now I have absolutely no idea. I guess I'm just going to pick NC State because neither team really deserves to be favored. So I'm just going to pick the team that isn't. But neither of these teams are genuine top 25 teams to me right now. And I don't really trust either one. So I'm just going to say NC State's defense gets enough stops and wins the game.
I'm going to go Wake Forest. And I'm going to say that the game against Louisville, while alarming, was just a nightmare aberration. I mean, Sam Hartman with 6 turnovers by himself, 3 picks and 3 fumbles. I mean, I think a guy that is as good as he is and has accomplished as much as he has in his career, steadying hand as the head coach with Clawson, I think he'll bounce back in a big way, and I expect a really strong, precise offensive performance from Wake Forest. Now, NC State defense is good, but even with how they looked better, and I was watching that game Thursday night too, and they looked like a different team after the quarterback change. I just don't think much of their offense, and I just think against a Wake Forest team that is anywhere close to normal, they're going to put up some points. And I don't think NC State can hang with them. So I'm going to go Wake Forest.
I'm going to agree with Reese here. I just can't get out of my mind that Wake Forest has won 4 out of the last 5 matchups. And in none of those matchups would you think Wake Forest had distinctly superior talent. So look, Sam Hartman had a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad performance against Louisville. Nobody can deny that. But I think there's enough of a body of work there where he's allowed a mulligan. And I think MJ Morris is a really intriguing quarterback for the future, and give Tim Beck credit for having him ready for that second half. But I'm going to take Hartman and those freaky Wake receivers to figure out a way to move the ball down the field and win. Don't be surprised if this game, and most Wake Forest games aren't, but don't be surprised if this ends up being low scoring, just because I think both offenses I don't think Wake's going to come out ripping it 9 times on the first possession. I think you're going to ease Sam into things. And I don't think NC State is just going to magically recapture the second half juju that they had against Virginia Tech last week and keep storming. So, I think it, in that case, you just got to go with Wake.
I need it to be low scoring, I think, for NC State to cover. And it does spook me that the last 2 games in the series were both 45-42. But this really is who do you trust the most, or who do you not trust the least, I guess, and we'll see.
All right, fellas, let's shut it down with locks. Pretty good week last week. 2-0-1. I don't think you guys have ever gone 3-0, but that's about as close as it's been. So let's hear it. Whoever wants to go first can dive on in.
I'll give you a lock, and I'm going to go completely off the board for the lock, because sometimes when you're on a podcast, you're on a show, you look for an opportunity, right, to blend things that you care about together, right? So within the lock, I'm going to give you a dumb loses more than smart wins lock, okay?
Is that brought to you by Eckridge Farm Smoked Sausage?
Exactly. Yeah, maybe so. Did you guys see what they did to the kid at Stanford who wears the tree costume? Now, I'm not the biggest fan of the Stanford band, sometimes sort of sophomoric, and the tree's kind of goofy. But the tree, because there's been some consternation on campus over the way the administration is handling parties, the tree, in true free speech fashion, held up a sign that said, "Stanford hates fun." So they suspended the kid. Well, Stanford apparently does hate fun. They just proved his point for him. Stanford is playing Washington State. That is not exactly a headline game by any stretch of the imagination, right? Stanford has had trouble scoring, but I suspect they've won two of three. They're playing a little bit better. And there's part of me that wants to get on the side of, you know, the kids who are railing against the administration and squelching their fun. But then I started thinking, now, wait a minute. The fun is in the winning. Well, Stanford doesn't do that very much these days. The fun comes when you're right about something. So instead of just trying to make a point and standing up for the tree, I'm instead going to say that the fun is in the winning. Stanford hasn't done much of that. Stanford apparently, according to this tree mascot, hates fun. And if they hate fun, then therefore they hate winning. So my lock is going to be Washington State going to the farm and covering the 5.
Okay. I think I followed that.
Bill, you hate fun too, because you gave me the, okay. All right. I tried really hard there and I got, okay. So you know what? Stanford hates fun and Bill Connolly hates fun and SP Plus hates
His numbers
fun.
Didn't indicate that we should have fun right now. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't once I saw what, how my picks did. I can go next. The Lions are not fun this week. They're very, very good. I try to get out, tweet out my SP Plus picks as soon as possible in the week before the Lions move and make them even harder. But even like Sunday night, like 2/3 of the spreads were within like 2-3 points of SP Plus. So it's no fun at all trying to find best bets. There's one line though that I do not understand even slightly. South Carolina looked like garbage last week against Missouri. Missouri controlled their offensive line much better than, like, I mean, Missouri's got a good defensive front, and I still didn't really see that coming. Eli Drinkwitz was able to be as conservative as ridiculously possible for about 40 minutes, and they still scored more than enough points and controlled South Carolina 123-10. South Carolina dropped like 9 places in SP Plus last week because of it, because they just looked bad. SP Plus still says they win by 2 touchdowns at Vanderbilt, and that's including a home field advantage that we know doesn't really exist for Vanderbilt some of the time. I have no idea. I know Marshawn Lloyd's hurt or questionable or whatever. I have no idea why this line is 7. It's been 7, 7.5 all week. That's not nearly enough. You know, Vanderbilt should be able to, you know, hit a couple plays here and there, but South Carolina's defense is good enough to control this one. I see South Carolina win by at least 2 touchdowns here.
I am going to take my lock in the old American Athletic Conference noon kick ESPNU for the hardcores. Tulane is headed to Tulsa. The Green Wave are 7.5-point favorites, and I really feel like the Green Wave's magic bus that they've gone on this year will be able to go into Tulsa and roll. This is a no surprises game. These coaches know each other well. They know their schemes very well, and I just really feel like Tulane has shown us time and again this season that they're able to go win on the road, and they should be able to handle Tulsa, considering that Tulsa gave up 53 points to Navy, and they gave up 45 points to SMU. I think the Green Wave can go there and roll Wave.
You know, I'm getting heavy lobbying from the Crescent City of New Orleans that should Tulane win that game, to have College Game Day come to New Orleans for UCF and Tulane the following week.
I've gotten similar lobbying, but I don't have any juice, so that people are just basing their time lobbying me. Now, I'd like to go to Giacomo's and have a nice meal. And I certainly am a big fan of New Orleans and a fan of Willie Fritz and the Wave. But do you think that could happen, Reese? What if Oxford comes off the table here?
I think it's possible. I think a couple things have to fall in line. Don't forget. Two among the contenders. Don't forget Illinois that week two. Home game against Purdue, maybe a chance to, you know, depending on things, to lock up the Big Ten West, maybe. Those types of things all are under consideration. But I think Tulane is one that's being considered for sure. They're a great turnaround story. Sure that Tulsa doesn't ruin things for them, Pete. And there you went and tried to jinx them. Bye.
Champagne, New Orleans.
Willie Fritz is one of my favorites. He's one of my favorite coaches, period. But he's also like what they've done this year. I don't remember if it was Schlabaugh or Bonagura, one of the people who do our bowl projections, predicted for the one of the NY6 matchups, UCLA versus Tulane. And I kind of blacked out for a second because I cannot think of two prettier uniform combinations to be on the same field at the same time. That would just be the most gorgeous football game of all time. Two fun offenses too.
You know, the fun thing about Tulane is if we were a couple of years down the road and these initial college football playoff rankings turned out to be the final ones, then Tulane would be in the playoff. And Tulane's first round game under this situation would be against Georgia, because though Georgia is ranked third by the CFP under the new system, highest four ranked conference winners get the bye. So Georgia would have been the highest ranked at large team, and they would have played the lowest ranked team, which would be Tulane. So that would have left UCLA out. That would have left the Bruins out of the playoff field under that scenario. So it's just something to think about as you look ahead.
I also think too, like week 10 or whatever, when isn't the right week to really dial in on that, because UCLA or USC is going to lose again, right? Like there's going to be cases built and unbuilt as results come. So
I gave you the caveat that if it were to if it were ending like that,
yeah, just, no, it's fair. It's
just to get people fair. Used to the exercise is all.
Yeah. No, and that's why I asked the question.
Are you like Connolly and you hate fun too?
I think that's what we've established here. I'm not alone in this. I do. I love the top four thing, by the way. Like I was worried that was once they eventually agreed on how the expanded playoff was going to look. I was worried they were going to get rid of the conference champions get the bye thing, just as like a, you know, Greg Sankey holding a grudge, if nothing else, and putting his foot down. But I'm glad that survived. That's going to be some. It's just an extra carrot there for as we go down the stretch for like the Big 12 race and the Pac 12 race and the ACC race and all these things. And that'll be really interesting to follow.
I'm not happy about it. And I'm even less happy about the fact that there's no threshold for the conference champions to make it. Now Tulane would make the, you know, any reasonable threshold, they would be fine. There'll be years that won't be fine. And we'll have plenty of time to argue that on other days for sure. So, gentlemen, hopefully we will do better with our picks this week than we have in recent weeks. A great weekend for the first weekend in November of college football coming up. A blockbuster game in Athens and a couple of good undercards. And something that I'll mention on game day tomorrow morning, just in case you've forgotten, Florida State and Miami play on Saturday too. Speaking of blockbuster games that are now afterthoughts. So even the afterthought games have some rich history in them as well. So enjoy your college football weekend. Best of luck. For the fun haters, Bill Connolly and Pete Thamel, I'm Reese Davis. We'll see you next week. Fun's okay. You guys in the Stanford administration, you just don't like fun. Download this podcast wherever you like to get your podcast. We appreciate your support.